Hey everybody, welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. And today I am joined by my fabulous co-host, Lee Marie Hostetter. Hey
Hi,
Lee.
everyone.
So part three, is that what we're on of our Q&A? We had
Yeah.
long-winded answers to all of our questions. So we are on the third section, and then I think we got some extras as well. But I would be remiss if I didn't recap our amazing posing seminar that we had on Sunday. I felt like it was the perfect amount of people. It was about 20 total.
Yeah.
We were able to work in two different rooms, which is great. So you kind of like learn after being in a space and like understanding, the last one, I think we had like double the amount of people. We had like 40, which was too much for that small of a space. And this time we had a couple of wellness, a couple of figure. So it was nice that we had the other room that we could kind of like have, Kim in there and then Bikini in the main room. And so what were your thoughts of the posing seminar?
I love it. This is the third, I believe, fourth posing seminar I've been to for Glam Girl Bikini. And what I
Yeah.
love about it is we have veteran competitors, people that have been competing for years, and then we have people that literally have no idea what they're doing, don't even have a show on the books, but are interested in competing and have no idea what to do. So Amy and our amazing guest poser Kim Seeley and Brittany are all and myself are all there, and we go through literally what you have to do on stage. So the mandatory poses, and we teach everyone, and then we work with people. We have them walk out. We practice call outs, how to stand in line. We literally practice everything that happens, and then at the end, we always do a mock show, and it's literally like one of you is the judge, like Kim was the judge, and she called people out like this number and that number, exactly like an actual show. And it's so nice because if you've never been to a show and you're totally brand new, there's so many little things that we don't think to talk about. It's just, oh, we naturally know that that's the way it happens because we've been to so many different shows. But like you, Amy, you were the expediter, and so you were moving them around the stage, and they learned so much. And then we see little things like, oh, I saw so many little pet peeves that I've noticed from like novice competitors, and it's like they just don't know. And we assume, oh, this is of course what you do on stage, and they just don't know. So then it's like working out all those kinks. Like one of the things you always point out, Amy, and I still see this in pictures, and it's a huge pet peeve, is when they put the medal around your head if you win an award, not taking the time to flip your hair outside of the medal. So you get that helmet head, and it's so
Yeah.
awkward. And I feel like there's a few other
Well.
things like that I noticed with some of the posing. Girls were afraid to like move their hair with their hands. And especially in some of like the figure, you have to actually show muscles. You have to move your hair, and they would kind of try to flip it so that they wouldn't move their arms out of their pose. And something that I was just thinking is like, it's okay to move your arms and adjust yourself a little bit. If your hair is covering one of your shoulders, say in bikini, move it behind so that you can show your best physique, you know, things like that.
Yeah, the top competitors do that. Yeah.
Yes,
I mean, I've seen
exactly.
it happen. Yeah. Their
Yeah.
hair's not going to be in the perfect spot. But yeah, that is my really big pet peeve. You can't unsee that once you see it. But I think I've talked to so many first-time competitors that are so disappointed with their stage pictures because they're in the victory stance. They could have won the class and they have this helmet head with their, you can't see me if you're listening on the podcast, but if you're watching on YouTube, you can see what my hair looked like, and it just looks hideous. It's basically a helmet head, is what it comes down to. But yeah, there were people that were going to compete like this weekend, and there were people that were not going to compete until the fall, and then there are people that are getting ready for like our May show. Was the majority of them because we have our first ever natural competition here in Kansas City, the MPC Midwestern States. Are hosting, and this will be your first experience coaching in person, right? Because you've only done coaching virtually. She was in Salt Lake City the last time. So,
I'm
how are you
so
feeling about
excited.
that?
It was so good to see my client, like my athlete, in person too, because then
Yeah.
I could see, oh, yes, I think we're going to adjust this and adjust that. And I could see her pose and things like that. And it's so cool to see a client in person. I definitely do think we did really good coaching over Zoom, and that can, you can definitely do that. But yeah, I'm really excited for this show to be local.
Yes, me too. And we got some great questions like at the end of the seminar, just newbie questions. But what were some things that stood out to you that you want to share with our audience that you feel like was something that like was a big takeaway for people, or like something that's kind of nuanced and trending for the coming up and coming year?
I don't know if it's new or trending, but a couple of things that I really noticed about the competitors, I loved seeing the gamut of the figures that were quite lean and ready to compete. And then the ones that were quite obviously either far out in prep or in the middle of an off season, or even just thinking about competing, and how if you are, I mean, even if you're super lean, it takes a lot of confidence, even in a room full of other just women, to strut out and pose in a bikini, right? That just takes a lot of confidence. And if you are in an off-season body, it takes even more confidence. But what I noticed was there were a few of the girls that just radiated confidence. And some of them, there was this one girl whose smile, just her whole face just lit up. And she wasn't the best poser of the group. She was, you know, she was pretty lean. I think she was competing soon. And she was learning a lot. She wasn't the worst. She definitely knew what she was doing, but she wasn't the best. But every time she came out in a line, my eyes just went to her because her smile was just so genuine. And it was just, it just reminded me of, even if you don't love being on stage, find something that is going to make you smile. Find a happy thought that you can come on stage and just think about that, so that the judges can see your joy, because their eyes are going to be drawn to you, and you want their eyes drawn to you. You want, when you walk out in a line, you want them looking at you because you have that it factor. And then just the confidence. I remember seeing one or a couple that were not their leanest. So maybe their physiques didn't look quite as stage ready as someone next to them, but the way they posed with confidence, it just made me gravitate to looking at them. And it made me think, wow, they look really great. And not only does posing make a huge difference, but having that confidence can make, even if you are getting on stage, it can make your physique look so much better by posing well and posing with confidence. So that was kind of what I picked up.
Yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, I think just getting to a show, if you're a new competitor, if you've never competed and you're about to, just going to the show and actually watching, or going to one of these seminars, you know, I always tell them, I am not here to just talk to you. Like, if you're coming to a posing seminar, we're practicing majority of that 2 hours, you know, because I don't want people just sitting there being lectured at, because that's not going to help them. Especially like if you're at a posing seminar, you need to be physically posing, because if you're not doing it with your body, then what's the point, you know?
Right.
So that was like one of my main goals with that. And I was so glad that like Savannah came from Angel Competition Bikinis, and then, it was just fun to kind of give out. I gave out some different door prizes that I normally do. And I don't know. It was kind of fun to do that.
I know. You were telling me the prizes, and I was like, wow, okay. Can I sign up? They're good. But also, I think anytime that we put on a free seminar, you can, if you're in the area, or if you can tune in live on Instagram, so anyone can tune in live. We always go live on Instagram for these. The people that we have, so Brittany is an amazing posing coach. You, both you and Kim Seeley are or have been judges, have been competitors, and have been coaches. And so you guys see things from a judge's perspective, but can also talk from the athlete's perspective. And it's really, really good feedback to actually have people that have judged watching you in a posing seminar, watching you practice and giving you real live feedback. Because we don't even get that at shows. We get feedback after the point, but it's literally like sitting in front of a judge and getting in like real live feedback from your posing. That's invaluable in this sport for sure.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you putting it on for us the last couple of ones live. And if you are interested, you can actually watch the playback of that live on our IG channel, or on our IG channel, on our IG page, yeah. Glam Girl Bikini. So But yeah, moving on, because we have a lot of questions that we've gotten. So I know like the tail end of our last one. So we had part one, part two, this is part three. So the question that was coming up was, how long should someone stay in maintenance before doing a bulk or a cut? That's for you. Or do you want me to start with that
one? Well, they're talking about the off season, right? No, you go ahead. Go ahead and start.
Okay. So this one's complicated, and it definitely just depends on a lot of factors. So when someone says they're in maintenance, that doesn't necessarily mean they're in off season 100%, because you could be getting like ready for a cut. You could be, or, you know, I mean, basically that's what I think that they're trying to say, but it gets a little tricky because maintenance calories are just basically what your body needs to stay exactly where it's at. So like, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit of muscle growth in a maintenance phase when you're not in a deficit at all. So that maintenance is one of those things that's like a toggle switch of between improvement season and cut. Because for me, like, I try to keep competitors in either maintenance or a slight surplus during the improvement season. So that's where I guess I'm getting like a little bit like with the wording. I just want to make sure that that's clear, because some people need like a slight surplus. Some need to be in maintenance, depending on how soon they're going to be going into prep as well is another factor.
I think maintenance, personally, too, maintenance is always changing. Like, first you have to talk about the reverse, because when you're done with a show, maintenance calories for you, if you wanted to maintain your weight at show weight, that's going to be very low. So first you have to go through a reverse. You have to find a place where you are comfortable in your body and then find those maintenance calories. You know what I mean? Because you're going to need to put on some weight after the show. And that is going to be muscle and body fat. You cannot, as a natural competitor, put on only muscle and zero body fat. It's just not going to happen after you come off stage lean. And it's not even healthy. You need to put on a little bit of healthy body fat, and you can put that on slowly and you can be conservative. You do not have to blow up and add a ton of weight, but you have to find, I think you have to find this place of where your body feels good health-wise and is set up for a good place to put on muscle and be in an improvement season, while also always thinking about your next prep too. So you have to find that place. And then once you find that healthy body place, then you find your maintenance calories, because you want to maintain that weight. You kind of pick the weight you want to maintain. If I wanted to maintain a stage lean body, I could, but I would be eating very low calories, and that would be my maintenance calories. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I don't love the word bulk in any form. So for me, it's a lean gain phase. So that's why I'm keeping competitors near maintenance, near a slight surplus, depending on how much their metabolism can handle it, how far they are out from their next show. Because to me, like, if their show isn't for a while, it's okay to like kind of teeter on the side of surplus. Mm-hmm. But you can still build muscle in maintenance calories. You don't need to bulk. And when the word bulking comes around, it makes me kind of cringe, because it's like the old school bodybuilding where you're putting on so much fat in order to make those extra gains of muscle that by the time you go to actually cut it, you lose a majority of that muscle that you've built by trying to burn all that body fat that got packed on. So it's like, you're kind of looking for that optimal, like, homeostasis place, like you said, like with your hormones, with your energy, with, you know, like whatever that is for that person. That homeostatic kind of place, like that happy place for the body to be thriving, is what I'm kind of looking for, like in a competitor. If this person, in fact, is saying somebody that's staying in maintenance, if they're talking about whether or not they should like go to surplus or go to deficit. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where we're at. Like bulk, we're considering surplus, right? And then cut, we're considering deficit. So you just have to, there's no like length of time that is cookie cutter, because it's like, you know, you may need to put on like a lot more muscle than XYZ person, you know? Mm-hmm. And even if they are not natural, like it's still one of those things that it's hard to stay lean.
Yeah.
Like year round, you just can't, that's not realistic. So,
well, and I think there's a side of it too, that is not just, competition based or goal based. I think there's the mindset side of it. So
yes, definitely.
You might have gone a little overboard and you might now be slightly uncomfortable because you're a little bit fluffier, have a little higher body fat percentage than you would like to have, especially if you're in the fitness industry or, you know, competitor. But that doesn't necessarily mean you should go right into a cut, because mentally and even for like health markers, your body is still recovering from this show and from this intense deficit that you've been in. And you might need to, you know, have some other goals and work on your relationship with food, work on, you know, enjoying life a little bit, work on your getting your health markers, getting your blood work done, getting watching for those different energy levels, sleep levels, hormones, those types of things too, before just jumping into a cut because you might be a little uncomfortable. And so that's where I think having a coach is so important during the off season. And I know you preach this all the time, Amy, is having someone else, like an outside, to give you that look. If you, cause I get this way too. It's like, oh, I'm not comfortable at this weight. Let me just cut back 5 pounds. And it's like, in the long
run. That was last year. That was your MO last year. I'm like, no, just hang on to this.
Yes,
improvement season a little longer.
Yeah. Let your body repair itself, get back to all, you know, your health markers back to a good spot, and your mental, you know, back to a good spot. I think for me and for a lot of women, we just need reassurance. Like, it's okay not to be super lean. Think of the long-term goal. This is your goal right now. Like, you look great. Like, my family is always telling me, Lee, you look great. And like, we need to hear that, because we get this picture in our mind that we need to be super, super lean in the off season. And you don't, like, you don't have to go overboard, but you're not going to have all of those lines from stage all year round and make improvements too. So don't jump too far or too quickly right back into a cut, if that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. And I think that kind of segues into this other question. They mm-hmm. said, what is a normal amount of weight gain during the improvement season? And I know certain teams and certain coaches are like, it needs to be this percentage of your body weight, or your, you know, like your, depending on your height and your weight, like you can only gain like this much or mm-hmm. this many pounds, but that's really not the case. Like you were saying, you know, if you have a lot of like just mental, you need a mental break with things so that you're not getting burnt out. Like there's a lot of things that need healing in different seasons. And I think that it's important to, like, when you are in an improvement season, you should have a performance-based goal. And you should be looking at, like, what kind of weights are you pushing? And, you know, like, less about the scale. I've had to, like, point out to several of my clients, like, recently, that just showing them, like, I don't care about your weight. And then, like, I'll show them a picture of, like, what they looked like a year ago. And they look so much stronger. And, like, their inches are down and their weight is up. That means they gain muscle. You know, if your inches are down and your weight is higher, mm-hmm. you are going to weigh a little bit more. If you're doing the right things, like if you're building muscle properly, you are going to weigh more mm-hmm. because you took the time to build and focus on your, you know, like what kind of weight you're pushing. Like, I just think that that's important to shift that focus. And so, like, looking at a scale and being like, I get it. Like, some people are like, I'm not comfortable after I get to this weight, mm-hmm. which is totally understandable, because I'm definitely the same way. And I mean, I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to have to buy new clothes and things like that, but there has to be like a little bit of a shift in knowing that there's not like a magic number for everybody to like gain back or not gain. Cause I have some people that don't really gain a ton of weight. You know, there are people that we've had like, you know, 2,000-3,000 calories, like when they were like quote unquote dieting. And it's like, I mean, you were kind of, you know, at a high calorie rate anyway. So there wasn't like a whole lot of you know, shift. Some people just stay lean all year round, and that's more a genetic thing than anything. And I'm definitely not one of those people that's lean year round.
Nope.
Well, and not also, in the slightest. And so that's just.
Your height, your structure, the thickness of your bones. Like, I'm a very tall competitor. Whatever these coaches are saying, like, you shouldn't, you know, gain more than this. Well, what if you're really tall and you need to get, like, if I put on, like, I could put on 10, I think I put on 30 pounds the last off season and I did not buy a new wardrobe. Yes, my clothes got a little bit tighter in the off season than they were when I was lean, but like, I'm so tall that I don't have to buy a new wardrobe versus somebody that's maybe like 5 or 5 feet or 4'11". If they put on 30 pounds, yeah, they might need to buy some new clothes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so individual for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that's again, I don't mean to keep preaching this, but like, that's why you do need a coach to understand like the industry and to understand like where you're at, like what you need to feel confident in your skin, but also at the same time, like have the right priorities for the right season and things like that. So,
I
mean,
also, I think this is a way, or it could be a way for someone to validate their weight gain. And I'm always so looking for anything that's like mental or emotional with this sport, because it is a sport, and whether or not you are lean or in an off season body has nothing to do with your worth or your success as a human. Right. So
Absolutely.
It's really important not to get fixated on a number if it's going to be more than just data. Data is awesome. We love data, right? We can look back to different preps, or you looked this way at this weight, but now you look this way at this weight. Like, data is really important in our sport. But if it's going to affect your mind and think, well, I'm a failure if I go above this weight, you know, and if it's going to affect you, that's not, we need to take that off the table, especially in the off season, you know?
Absolutely. And it's funny because you just keep segueing into these other questions. So the third question that I think it was the same person, if I remember, it's been so long ago since we had these posted, but it said, should you do a body comp? And I think they meant body composition test during prep or after to track muscle and fat. And the answer, again, I think is yes. And yes, like you want to measure when you're in prep. When you're leaning out, you want to measure during an improvement season. I think sometimes that's, you know, and you can speak on this a little bit, but like when we were doing the monthly Fit 3D scans, you know, and I was telling like lean muscle and body fat, and it's like when weight goes way up and you're like, if you're like freaking out about that number, it's so reassuring to get on the Fit 3D scanner and be like, oh my gosh, like majority of this was muscle. But you've got to be careful with the measurement tool. That's the one caveat that I will tell you. If you are doing an in-body scan, those are so finicky. I know they're really convenient because they're basically free at supplement stores and things like that, but they're also inconvenient on the side of like, there's certain times of day that those stores are open that you can get into them. And if you've eaten, you've drank water, you've worked out, so you've sweated, you've had caffeine, so it's made you pee a lot. The variables with those kind of bioelectrical impedance are just so high that those can really mess with your mind big time. So my biggest thing that I do is I try to get a DEXA at the beginning of prep. Then I try to get it right at the end. And trust me, like I don't do short preps. This is like usually 4 to 6 months that I take to lean out because my body just takes a lot of time, you know, and I want to give myself enough time. Like if I have 30 pounds to lose, then I'm going to at least give myself 30 weeks. So with that in mind, you know, I'm doing a DEXA maybe quarterly if I'm doing like a couple of shows, but I'm probably just doing it like a couple of times a year, like bookended, you know, beginning and end of prep. And so that way I can kind of see like, at the end of my improvement season, like where am I at with my body fat? Where am I at with my muscle? But I don't know. What are your thoughts with composition tests?
I think you're absolutely nailed it on the head with the in-body scan. It is so finicky. And the amount of people that I see get depressed or super bummed after they see their scan. And then I'll look at it and I'll be like, hey, look at your water. Are you on your cycle? Like, did you work out first? There's so many questions. I can always talk them off the ledge during that. But I do, I love the Fit 3D scanner that I've done. I've never done a DEXA, but I would come and do it at least once a month during prep.
For the Fit 3D scan, not the DEXA.
Fit 3D scan, yeah. Not DEXA. Nope, for yeah. Fit 3D, because it's at the Glam Girl Lab. So checking in with my coach includes that Fit 3D scanner scan that I would do once a month. And that really did help. And then in the off season, which now I'm reminded because I'm in the off season right now that I need to be doing that. But yes. It really does help you get encouraged that you are making progress. And I think it just helps us see to what, I mean, you as a coach, maybe what we need to work on more, just like what I was saying about seeing my client in person at the posing seminar and seeing, oh, I think we need to build this up or make sure we don't lose any more right here. And we need to lean this area out. And so like actually having that on a scan and seeing the muscle, especially in the mm-hmm. improvement season when you might not notice because you have more body fat, seeing the areas. I know for me personally, my scans have shown that one of my glutes is like has been slightly off from the other one. So then we started doing a lot of like single leg work and things like that to even them out. So just things like that can be super helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Fit 3D or the StyQ, whichever one you have like in your local area, they're very affordable. They're usually like between $10 and $30. And you don't get the radiation exposure like you do with DEXA. So I am very like aware of that. It is like an X-ray, mm-hmm. which makes it extremely mm-hmm. accurate with the DEXA. It is very expensive. I know we get like a special rate as like glam girl athletes in town at our, you know, Fit 3D. Yeah. Wait, what's it called? DEXA Fit KC. That's what it's called. So we get special rates with the DEXAs there, which is nice. And then once the Beastified gym opens, that one's going to be really nice because that'll have a Fit 3D scanner in it too. But yeah, like I have a client in Alaska that she sends me her Fit 3D scans that she gets locally. She pays like $10 for them. And it's just a good way for us to keep track. Like she goes like once a month and we just kind of keep an eye on like where her muscle growth is. And it's really cool to see that over time, kind of that progress. So,
okay. So last two questions kind of go hand in hand. So one of them is the amount of protein. What is the amount of protein for lifestyle versus a bodybuilder? I think they're kind of asking, is there a difference? Mm-hmm. And then part two of that question is how much is too much protein? So first, is there a difference between lifestyle and bodybuilder for protein?
So dietitians will tell you differently. The National Board of Dietetics, like the amount of protein that they say is recommended for populations is so small to me, mm-hmm. you know, because an aging population, they need more protein than a younger. If you are weight training, I really do feel strongly about the fact that you need at least a gram of protein per pound of body weight, roughly. Mm-hmm. If you're in an improvement season and you're really trying to grow, then it may be like a 1.25 factor, maybe even a little bit slightly higher if you're a pretty lean individual. I've been known to push the needle there. But anything, I mean, it depends on lifestyle, like what their goal is. Most people want to look mm-hmm. lean and shredded even if they aren't competing. I mean, let's face it, like everybody wants kind of like a beach body. So under eating protein is probably the number one fix that I can do with my lifestyle clients. As soon as I up their protein to closer to their body weight, some of them, we can't even get them to it because they've just been so vastly under eating, like, you know, like a 180 pound person, like I'll get them up from, they were previously eating like 60 grams to even 120, like doubling it, or it's not even close to their body weight yet, but like just eating that double amount and being like very aware of just changing that one variable, it always creates weight loss. Mm-hmm. I find that all the time. And I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on that because you do a lot more lifestyle than I do, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for lifestyle, for bodybuilder, I mean, protein is non-negotiable, and there are set meals that you need to be eating. For lifestyle, though, I definitely treat my lifestyle clients. I mean, they don't eat. We shoot for the same goals as a bodybuilder, because I was going to say it depends on your goal, but no matter what goal you tell me, I'm going to give you probably the same amount of protein, maybe for a different reason. If you're trying to put on muscle, you need that gram per pound of body weight. Usually, if you're trying to lose weight, you're going to need that gram per pound of body weight. If you're just trying to get more fit, feel better, you know, say, trying to stay full on a diet, all of those things, you need that gram per pound of body weight. Now, the one exception I would say is if I have a client who is coming to me trying to lose a lot of weight, and maybe it's not practical for someone to try and eat, like, let's say they have maybe 50 to 100 pounds to lose, maybe they can't eat a gram per pound of body weight. Then I will ask them, okay, what are we shooting for? What is your goal body weight, or a body weight where you felt comfortable? And often I'll pick that body weight, or another hack that I actually just learned. You can take their height in centimeters, and that gives you a good kind of range for a protein goal to shoot for too. If they're like quite overweight, and I know it's not practical for them to eat like over 200 grams of protein, especially for the amount of calories that they have, if that makes sense. But yeah. And then how much is too much protein? This I actually just saw, I believe it was a reel, but it might've been a video too, by Dr. Lane Norton, who is amazing. Guys, look him up. He's awesome. About this and the research on this. I'm not going to quote it directly because I'll get it wrong, but basically the premise of it is you're not going to eat too much protein. And there's a couple of different, like, just with the research coming out, but there's also a couple of different reasons for that. I would say, unless, just from a practical standpoint, unless you are mostly eating things like protein shakes or things that are infused with protein, like protein Pop-Tarts or something like that, if you are eating whole foods protein, like chicken and fish and ground turkey and egg whites, things like that, it's not going to be possible for you to physically eat too much protein. They are just going to fill you up. You're just not going to overeat to a dangerous place, if that was even a thing. You might overeat on calories. So you want to make sure that you're staying within your calories. And you also want to take into factor things like, you do need some fats in your diet. Those are essential. You do need some fiber in your diet so that you feel good. You know, you don't necessarily need to survive any carbs in your diet, but you're going to feel a lot better if you put some carbs in your diet. So staying with your calories and not eating 100% of your calories out of protein is probably a good idea, but I definitely don't know that I would worry about eating too much protein as long as it's not taking away from the other things you need to eat within your calorie budget.
I will add one thing to that. So that's with the exception of if you have some sort of disease or like, so disease populations, that does not apply. This applies to healthy individuals. So people that do not have, you know, liver issues or kidney issues, or just general digestive issues. With my clients that have like, any sort of like, if they have elevated numbers of their liver, I always err on the side of going under their body weight. If they have any sort of digestive issues where, you know, things are slower, I tend to veer on the lighter side of protein. So those are just some things too to keep in mind. But I think sometimes people think, you know, around the workout too, like that anabolic window, that they're like, okay, if I eat a ton of protein before I lift and then I eat a ton of protein before or after, that it's going to like make this huge difference in muscle protein synthesis. And that is not the case. So you're only, and there's been studies on this, like about how much actually like uptake and what amount is actually used. And, you know, for just like a general rule of thumb, I would say for like a smaller female, anywhere between like 20 grams of protein, and then a taller female, like 25 to 30. Mm-hmm. And then like a male, about the most that they're going to utilize is about 40 grams. The rest is going to be converted, you know. If people only ate protein, so they ate a carnivore diet, our bodies are too smart to know that, like, if they don't have carbs, they're going to convert that protein and, you know, our bodies are going to convert that into glucose. Mm-hmm. So there's not really like, there's like some, you know, safe falls that your body kind of runs into that you're not going to be able to like maximize. Just because you eat so much protein doesn't mean you're going to get like jacked and huge. Because there's not like so much you can actually absorb and digest and change into muscle through muscle protein synthesis. So,
okay. First of all, I love the gym bro Amy voice. I think that's back. Second of all, yeah. And I also think the point about carbs, like when I'm programming like the meal plan for a client and we do specifically pre and post workout macros, protein almost always stays consistent over all of the meals. We eat the same amount. It doesn't change pre-post workout. What does change a lot of the times is the carbs. So I think people are focusing way more on how much protein should I have? Just eat the same amount throughout, evenly space it throughout the day. Manipulate your carbs around your around your workouts if you want to get, you know, really emphasize the benefits of your workouts. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's hitting that total number. So like you could eat one meal a day and you'd still be fine. Like you'd still, if you have just like one meal that has all of your protein at it, which it wouldn't be optimal, especially if you're dieting and you're in a deficit, you're going to be like hungry at certain points and blood sugar regulation and things like that. But I think they did a study with like whey protein, having it like six times a day, and it at the end of the day, like it didn't matter. So it's not as like crucial, but I mean, if there's even a little bit of an amount that like matters with that stimulus, you know, we do believe in nutrient timing, that you need to have it pre and post workout to really support that muscle growth, but and really turn on muscle protein synthesis. But I don't know. Yeah. I digress. I feel like I could go on a tangent about this forever, but
I think with all of these things, there's elite and then there's things that make a tiny bit of difference. And a lot of the time you don't even notice that unless you are in a competition and measuring every tiny little thing, you know, but we are competitors and we do measure every little tiny thing.
Yes, we are living the prep life.
Yes, we are. Absolutely. But also, like just what you were saying too about too much protein. If you do have a medical condition, if you do need to watch your protein, that is not the advice we're giving here. We're giving sports nutrition advice. So body composition, you know, things like that. So
I just wanted to give that disclaimer because we are not doctors. We owe any advice that we give is just usually personal opinion or, you know, some of it's scientifically backed, but you always want to consult your doctor.
Absolutely.
Because everyone's different. So anyways, with that, we are so appreciative of all the questions. Thank you so much. If you would like to DM us any more questions, you can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. If you would like to apply for coaching with one of us, you can go to glamgirlbikini.com and hit the Get Started button to apply for coaching. Thank you so much for listening, guys.
Bye.